policies on pediatric care in the emergency department, smoking bans and cardiac arrest rates, Hollywood celebrities criticizing health insurance bosses, and we're going to take a look at GI elimination this week. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody this week. I want to remind you that if you are looking for additional resources associated with today's tip of the week, or if you want to follow up on the information from any of the news segments, don't forget you can find all of the links to everything that I've discussed in this episode over at nursingshow.com. And I urge you to do that. You know, it's important to follow up and get the information in depth beyond the overviews that I provide here on the show. And that's your job, is to go in there and make sure you understand how to apply the different areas that I've discussed into your own nursing practice or scope of practice in whatever you're doing. And so I would urge you to do that and make sure you head over to nursingshow.com, look in the show notes for each and every podcast, and check on that information there. Of course, I always love to hear from each and every one of you, and you can always leave comments on the Nursing Show site at any of the articles and share those comments with the rest of the readers there. But you can also reach me here directly by sending in your emails to comments@nursingshow.com. I love to hear from all of you, and it's a great way for you to send me links to news items and articles, ask me questions about something you're working on. If you have a problem you're dealing with and would like me to try to cover it in a tip of the week, definitely send me all of that information. And again, that email address is comments@nursingshow.com. Of course, you can find me over at Twitter and Facebook. Just look for PodMedic, twitter.com/PodMedic or facebook.com/PodMedic. Let's jump right on into this week's news, and I'm going to lead off with a story I found over at medicalnewstoday.com, and it's an article having to do with pediatric care and emergency departments. The American Academy of Pediatrics is sending out a recommended supplies list for U.S. emergency departments, and they are working together with the American College of Emergency Physicians and the Emergency Nurses Association to recommend essential equipment, medications, and training for personnel, because approximately 20% of all visits to the emergency department in the United States are for children, and yet we all will know that there aren't that many pediatric hospitals out there. In fact, many of these children are going to just their local ER or the closest ER, not getting to a pediatric specialty center. So what do you do when you have an emergency department that's really focused on adult care in that hospital, and yet you need to carry certain percentages or certain amounts of pediatric treatment equipment? I know this was an issue in an emergency department in which I worked in the past. There was some discussions between some of the administration of the hospital on how much of this pediatric equipment we really needed to purchase, when some of it was thrown out as it expired. You know, some of the sterile containers and things like that that reached their expiration date had to be discarded and were no longer able to be used. So it's an important thing to consider. I mean, there are financial considerations. This stuff isn't cheap, but we do need to be prepared to treat patients appropriately and using the right equipment as part of that. You know, the right tool for the right job kind of thing really applies to pediatric patients, because there are so many differences both in size and stature, but in general physiology and some of their anatomy is different than an adult patient. So we need to be aware of having the proper equipment to treat an emergency situation. So if you want to find the article on this, you should follow up and take a look. There's some links on that. And there's some essential information in there regarding treatment of swine flu and other flu patients who are pediatric patients, and how to deal specifically with some of the issues that might be faced with some of the respiratory ailments that they have. Moving right along, let's jump on into an article I found at CNNHealth.com and looking at a study that's kind of examined the impact of smoking bans in different places and how that has affected overall cardiovascular health and respiratory health in those regions. Now, this has been a hot issue in many areas, many states. You know, should we ban smoking in public places? If they already have, does that include bars and restaurants? Maybe you include restaurants but not bars, and now you're going to add bars to the ban. How does this affect the overall health of the community? And a really large debate occurs. But when we look at American, Canadian, and European cities, according to this article, that have implemented smoking bans, they had an average of 17% fewer heart attacks in the first year following the ban compared with communities who had not taken these measures. And then they followed this for each year after implementing the smoking bans for at least 3 years. And they found that they had an average of 26% overall decline in heart attacks compared with other areas that did not have similar bans. Now, there are, of course, a lot of things that come into these studies and probably some other things that cannot be accounted for. But certainly it is a significant drop in cardiac arrest and heart attacks based on something as simple as banning smoking in public places. Now, is this because people stopped smoking or just because of the reduction in secondhand smoke exposure causing fewer respiratory conditions to be exacerbated? Something to consider and look at, but I just thought it was an interesting article, and it certainly points out the impact of these community health initiatives, these public health initiatives that are enacted in favor of overall community health. And I think it's something that people often forget when they look at their individual liberties and freedoms, that the impact can be wide-reaching. And of course, those fewer cardiac deaths or cardiac arrests and heart attacks all come down to fewer dollars and euros spent on the care for those patients and saves the whole country a lot of money. Finally, I'm going to wrap up with a bit of a controversial story, and I'll just kind of throw it out there. I kind of hemmed and hawed about including this particular story in the episode, but you know, it was a video that I found that was published about in Hollywood celebrities coming out and criticizing in health insurance executives. Do these people actually have, you know, just because they're a celebrity, does it mean that they can come out and speak out on a given issue and a political issue? It's something as hot as health reform, which we all are probably sick of hearing about. But I found it interesting. And first of all, I'd like you to take a look at the video link that I'll provide. But certainly, it is a well-produced, as you would expect, look at insurance companies' focus on profits at the expense of patient care. And, you know, unfortunately, that's what goes on. I mean, yes, they have to stay in business, but that means that they're going to try to make more money. And the only way to make more money is to not spend as much on healthcare. So they have to make decisions that may not be in a patient's best interest all the time. And there's not enough oversight to really cover that. And this is one of the issues that's high in the healthcare debate, is whether there is any better oversight when the government's involved in that decision rather than a business. And I don't want to get into that, but what do you think about different organizations, whether it's your union or a national organization like the American Nurses Association, or any organization, whether it's your hospital or a corporation, coming out and having a stand and being very public about this kind of thing? When you know, how do you feel about that kind of thing? And so I that's why I included it. I really wanted to open the discussion up into why is it these large organizations or interest groups or people with the money and power to produce a video like this one, why is it that they get so much focus on them when really it should be us that are contacting our congressmen and our elected officials to have our voices heard? I think part of the problem is that we don't contact them enough. And so that these organizations can drown out the fewer voices that call in and raise their concerns. So it means we need to be more vocal, I think. But I'd love to hear what you think. I really want to get back a response on this. So really send me your emails and comments to comments@nursingshow.com. That's your email address, comments@nursingshow.com. Or leave a comment in the show notes right below this episode. There's a link for comments right there. And let me know what you think about this particular issue. Time for this week's tip and trick of the week. And I know you're all excited because we're going to be talking about fecal elimination, GI tract elimination. And I know that's everybody's favorite issue and looking at how we take care of patient care and dealing with all the things, your favorite thing in the world is talking about this. So let's jump on in without any further ado and look at some of the important aspects that a nurse needs to keep in mind when looking at this particular issue. First of all, let's think about patients' defecation habits, their bowel movements, and think about some of the things that might affect that. You know, first off, there's always the age considerations, and not just old age, but young age. You know, patients that we have that are pediatric patients that are potty training, that is an issue that we need to keep track of and something we need to be aware of. Does this patient need diapers, or do they need pull-ups, or are they progressing on to regular big kid underwear? Whatever the problem is, we need to certainly be aware of their defecation habits, and there are certain ages where that can cross over. The same thing is true at the older age as the GI tract loses motility, the body loses elasticity, and the patients are less mobile. All of that will affect the patient's ability and the overall aspects of their bowel movements. Also, diet and fluid intake are very important aspects to keep in mind. Obviously, less fiber is going to decrease the bulk and motility of the food the patient eats. If they are decreasing their fluid intake, then they're not going to have enough liquid to lubricate the system. I say often that the water is the lubrication of the GI tract because it's a very important aspect. It's the most important laxative there is. It'll keep you regular, staying hydrated, and we should remind our patients of that. General activity level is so much to do with overall health in general, but it really is just a very key aspect to assisting with peristalsis. The more mobile and we are in general, the easier it is for our bodies to move food through the system. You know, the constant movements and turning and up and down motions as we walk or move, all of that is going to assist with moving things through the system, and we should take that into account. There are psychological factors and habits also that are associated with this, and we should keep that in mind. Some patients are very focused on their fecal elimination habits and their bowel movements, and are they formed or not formed? Are they diarrhea or not? Are they constipated or not? Also, say they have to go a certain time of the day. They go the same time every day. Those are all part of psychological and habits associated with it. Remember, certain medications will affect a patient's bowel movements and their general GI elimination, and also certain diagnostic procedures will affect it. Now, you can look at things like having a full colonoscopy where they have to have everything cleaned out of their system. Obviously, they're not going to be jumping right back into their normal defecation habits because there's nothing in there to go. So they're going to have to be patient, unfortunately, or fortunately, and be aware that there might be some changes in the consistency of their stools and things like that. So you need to look at these types of things. Also, don't forget, anesthesia and surgery are huge impacts on the patient's bowel movements and general peristalsis, especially abdominal surgery. Anything that moves the tissue, moves the organs around in the GI tract, they tend to just shut down for a period of time. They don't like to be poked at. So, you know, if somebody's getting abdominal surgery and the surgeon's been moving around their intestines to look for masses or do biopsies or whatever, obviously the intestines say, all right, fine, I'm out for a little while, and they kind of go to sleep. So it takes a while for peristalsis to return and for everything to start moving again, and we need to be aware of that. And of course, anesthesia and goes in with medications. Some medications will help patients become more constipated, and other medications have side effects associated with looser stools. Finally, pain. Pain's a really important one, because if a patient is having pain management issues and that pain is increased when they have to push a little bit, when they have a bowel movement, guess what? They're going to try not to have a bowel movement. They're going to try to retain that stool because they don't want to have that pain. So we need to make sure pain management is right on the top of that list. Common problems that we run into, we've talked about them already: constipation, fecal impaction, diarrhea, incontinence, and flatulence. We can't forget flatulence just because it could be a problem. Someone has something going on where they're having a lot of gas production, but not a lot of bowel movements. Sometimes this can be a big problem for some people, and it may be something that we need to adjust, look into adjusting their diet, getting a dietary consult for them, looking at what it is they're doing that's causing this. And so we need to be aware that that too can be a problem. So let's talk a little bit about assessing our patients. First of all, remember, privacy is so very important, and we need to make sure we ensure that privacy. Speaking quietly if they have a neighbor in the room in a hospital setting, or just asking family members to leave, closing the curtains, all of these things are important. Just keep them in mind. We want to ask patients about the pattern, their defecation pattern. What do they do normally? If we know what their norm is when they're home, we can better understand what to expect when they're in the hospital and try to maintain that pattern. It's important. We want to get a general description of the feces from the patient, if possible. If not, and we have to do it ourselves, we want to make sure we assess and provide a description of that for documentation purposes, and then document any changes from the norm. We want to ask the patient about any problems or difficulties they've had in the past or have currently. We want to look for factors that are going on that might influence their ability to have a bowel movement, influence elimination. How active are they? Are there things in their diet that they normally eat? Are they patients that use over-the-counter laxatives on a regular basis? This can have an effect on them in many different ways. Physical assessment comes next. Obviously, we want to be assessing any patient in the hospital setting for the onset of skin breakdown, and that means we need to really look and make sure that they're cleaning well. Sometimes if patients are in pain or are restricted in motion for whatever reason because of a medical or surgical event, we need to make sure that they're adequately cleaning around the anal area so that we don't have skin breakdown from the stomach enzymes, digestive enzymes that are excreted in the stools. So this is something to be very aware of, and every facility has procedures on how often this should be done. I would say Q-shift. Everybody should be talking to their patients and examining their patients thoroughly at least once a shift, maybe once a day for a very alert and active patient, but certainly something to keep in mind. Also, we want to make sure we're looking at any diagnostic studies that have been done and use those as assessment tools so we can see what's been done in the past and what has been going on with the patient. And we want to make sure that for home care purposes, the patient and their family members or caregivers are aware of how to do these types of assessments themselves. For diagnostic purposes, there's a lot of different things that nursing diagnosis comes into play. Just primarily for our nursing students that listen to the show, I'll throw some of these out there. And you should look up and understand how each of the specific criteria for each diagnosis applies to a given patient before you just automatically assign them. Bowel incontinence, constipation, risk for constipation, perceived constipation, diarrhea, risk for fluid volume deficit, risk for impaired skin integrity, a low self-esteem, knowledge deficit related to bowel training or ostomy management or something like that, and in general anxiety also. And so I would urge you to look more in depth at these. If you're a student and need to have a better understanding of these, you should have some kind of a resource that you can use to look these nursing diagnoses up. But some key ones I'll just remind you of. Fluid volume deficit, so important. For patients that have diarrhea, we want to make sure the risk for fluid volume deficit is understood and that we're aware of adequate fluid intake to replace lost fluids from a patient who's experiencing diarrhea. Also, risk for impaired skin integrity. I talked about this a bit in the assessment section, but we definitely want to be making sure that we are carefully assessing our patients and looking at the status of their skin integrity, not just on their whole body, but specifically if they have a GI elimination problem in that region as well. As far as planning, our goal is to really try to either maintain a regular bowel function or restore a regular bowel function in our patients. And so we need to know what's going on. We need to look at any interventions that we need to plan to move the process forward, either to maintain or restore function. And we want to, you know, eliminate any risks that might be coming along, either because of upcoming procedures, the patient's ongoing health status with the current events, or with regard to any risks associated with the environment in which they are staying if they were to leave the facility or were going home. So when we talk about implementing any of these strategies, we want to make sure we provide time and privacy for the patient. We want to make sure that we're answering the call bell promptly for those patients that need assistance in getting to the bathroom. Because if that's what they need and we take 45 minutes to get in there after just sticking our head in and saying, I'll be right back, that patient may no longer feel the urge to have to go, and they will not go, and then they have a constipation issue or a fecal impaction issue. We really need to be aware of that. We need to monitor carefully, make sure that the adequate diet and fluids are going on, monitor our I's and O's very carefully, and document that information. Remember that exercise and activity promotes peristalsis, and it doesn't have to be a lot of exercise. You know, just moving a patient around in their bed, getting them to sit up at the bed or sit in a chair in the room, just moving them around, walking them to and from the bathroom. Work with your staff and your OT and PT people to coordinate this. Obviously, any of these things can be done by different staff members, but you can plan your day around what's coming up, and you definitely want to make sure these patients are getting up and moving around. Remember, positioning is very important, so you want to make sure you're moving the patients, rolling them if they're bedridden, make sure you're keeping them off of the pressure points and moving them frequently, because positioning is so important to prevent skin breakdown in general. But for patients with an incontinence issue, it's even more important, because we really need to keep the skin clean and dry and provide moisturization and ointment as necessary. And finally, we want to educate our patients. We want to make sure that they have the tools they need to improve their healthy lifestyle and improve their fecal elimination habits. Wellness education is so important. So we want to talk to them about the importance of regular exercise and activity, no matter how old they are or whatever their level of ability is. They should be able to engage in some activity and some mobility in some fashion. And the more they can do that, the better they'll be. High fiber foods are important. We should make sure they're getting plenty of fluids every single day. 2,000 to 3,000 milliliters per day for most people, unless they have some kind of fluid restriction. Don't ignore the urge to defecate. You need to teach people this. So many people are so busy that they ignore this, and this is where a lot of constipation issues come from, I think. We need to tell people to stop what they're doing and go to the bathroom, and then they can get back right to what they're doing and avoid a problem later on. Also, give themselves a time. For some people, it's good to schedule this kind of thing. And I know that sounds silly, but if people are busy and moving and doing a lot of things, sometimes they just need to make sure they're allowing enough time to do this. And for people that are kind of schedulers, and this is something that they want to, that they know they do the same time every day, then they should allow for that and schedule time for that. Finally, we need to talk to people about avoiding over-the-counter treatments for constipation and diarrhea as much as possible. Some people overuse these products, these different medications, and they cause other problems and issues with their diet and nutritional status and other things. Again, I have to reiterate, there are, you know, a good normal diet and plenty of fluid intake will cure what ails you in many cases. And so we need to make sure that we pass this information along and use those items sparingly. So that's it for this. Make sure you check the show notes for additional information and make sure that you check back in here at The Nursing Show. I'd love to hear your comments on this particular segment and let me know what other segments or tips you'd like me to discuss here on The Nursing Show. And that's going to wrap up another episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind all of you to check out nursingshow.com for all of the links and information discussed in this episode, all followed up on there in the show notes for this episode. So make sure you head over there and follow up on this information. Also, don't forget that you can leave comments there. So if there's something you liked about an episode, it's always great to hear back from you, and I really enjoy that. So send me your comments in there on the Nursing Show site. At the bottom of every article, you'll find a link that says comments or leave a comment. Go ahead and click on that link and leave a comment. Love to hear from you. You can also send me emails in to comments@nursingshow.com and let me know any links, any information you'd like me to share, or if I've made a mistake and need to make a correction. We definitely want to do that because we want the information going out to the Nursing Show community to be the best information possible for nurses, students, and educators around the world. Time to wrap up the show, as I always do, with some great PodSafe music from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. This is a song from an artist by the name of Curtis Peoples. We've played some of his stuff here before. This is a song called Back Where I Started. If you like what you hear, go ahead and check out the link in the show notes. Let Curtis know you heard his song here on The Nursing Show. And there is also a link in the show notes. If you'd like to, you can go over to iTunes and spend 99 cents and purchase his song in support of this independent artist. It's great to support them this way. That's it for me. I want to remind you, I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. I'm here every week on Friday night with The Nursing Show, so check it out. And in the meantime, please remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
sad.